check be made by a bonded inspector. When I bought my place, there were smoke detectors in every room. None of them were operating. The batteries were out. So I think an inspector, whoever does it, should certify that they are operating. The passivity by the city with regard to licensing enforcement and the fire safety of multi-dwelling units will likely put illegal rentals on steroids. Right now, the city is receiving more tax money from illegal units than they are from legal units. Now, that bit of information might be of interest to a future lawyer or a judge, but it's a warning. And I'm afraid the city of Portland is setting itself up to be the deep pockets in the event of a lawsuit and a horrific fire that kills people. I don't think you want to have that as a heritage. So I would say that the time for passivity is over now. And you need to embrace your responsibility, require that the Airbnb and the VRBOs and the rest of them only rent to licensed users. And the dogs and cats are out there all loose, and you got to put a number and an address on every one of them. This can be fixed. Thank you.
Thank you.
I've been hearing about what's going on with building this thing, and I always believe in the stuff that's helping the community and everything, since I'm registered here in Portland, but some friends on the visual we were talking about, they always talk about it, the Healing Man Sanctuary, but that was some good stuff, these speeches they were talking about, the motels and what they're going to make off it and whatnot, but I like the fact of coming up with solutions and just like hitting it where it's big, where everybody's all, getting something off of it, which is the community and like fixing up the community, the best of the best, And I like to have my input on some of this stuff because it gets kind of interesting about some of those things. Where's this going to be? Where's it going to be built at? That's where I got lost. Where do they want to put this up at?
Anywhere in the city.
Anywhere in the city?
Yeah.
So is this like you rent a room or is it like you rent a bunk? Room. How does that work?
A room.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and so what would something like that cost? I mean, your
you
city.
Can check, you can, they you have can it check
in
it
your,
out.
I mean, is it, it's website. In your city, but it's going to be like, I mean, I like, so they're talking about the Healing Man Sanctuary or Healing Man anyway, they about making bungalows or just living situations for the people, and I like that idea that was brought up. That was pretty cool. But anyway, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next three.
Teresa Nelson. Let's go with David Owen, Steve Unger. And we'll go with Jason Messer. What about Ilema Constantine?
Hey, Mr. Unger. I think you're, who's first, Mr. Owen?
I was going to have David go
first. All right, David, go ahead.
Sure. Good to see you, Steve. Okay. Good afternoon, Commissioners. David Owen with Airbnb. Wanted to start by thanking your staffs, Mayor Hales, the folks from BDS especially, and from Planning and Sustainability, who have put a significant amount of time into thinking through these issues and coming up once again with, I think, a thoughtful and balanced proposal, certainly one that reflects many different interests who participated in these discussions over the last now 3 or 4 months. And wanted to just, I think you've heard, you're probably going to hear from a lot of folks today, so and you may have some questions, so I won't take too much time other than to walk through. I think that the fact that we're very happy to see this moving forward, I think it makes sense from our perspective to create a system to provide a lawful avenue for people in all types of housing, as we know that it's occurring, this activity is occurring here in Portland. And I think this proposal does a very good job of moving in that direction. And as we've seen with the last legislation, which is now several months into operation, this is a first step and one that I think we all are going to keep an eye on. For us, this is it's as new as it is for the city of Portland. This was something that we all entered into this process now a couple of years ago, talking about this together, and look forward to continuing to work with the city. I know there's been a lot of discussion about the number of permits and the utilization or uptake process for folks who are applying, and wanted to make clear from our perspective that it is as important for us and our community that the program that you have created operate well as it is for the city. And you know, we were asked by BDS to communicate with our hosts and to create a field in our website for permit numbers to be displayed, both of which we have done, and I think we'll continue to do that and look forward to talking with your agency, Commissioner Fritz. And I want to particularly thank you for the amount of time that they have put into this and the amendments you brought forward today. And I'm sure folks have questions. So as I'm beeping, I will stop talking. But thank you very much.
Okay. Questions?
So you said that, and thank you for joining us today. You said you've created a field on the website for the permit number. And yet we heard earlier that as many as probably 99% of the eligible hosts have not yet had a chance to seek a permit. So what do you view as the barrier to your hosts getting a permit as we require?
I certainly can't speak for all of our hosts. There are many of them here in Portland, and I encourage you to ask that question to some of the folks who might be speaking today. But you know, from our perspective, I think education is the most important thing that we as a platform can provide to our users. We have, you know, millions of users around the world and hundreds of thousands of hosts. And from our perspective, it is critical for us to provide education to our hosts. We do so in a variety of fashions, through emails. We have responsible hosting pages in many cities. We have one here in Portland that walks through the various steps and rules for compliance. We can do more, and I think that we are very open to continuing the discussions with BDS and with the city to understand from the city's perspective what may or may not be working so that we can continue to do that.
Well, in that spirit, and I appreciate you committing to working with us on this, why shouldn't the city just mandate that any hosting on your website have a permit number or enter an agreement with you where they either have a permit number or they don't have the privilege of advertising on your website?
Sure. And my understanding is the ordinance, as it currently stands, requires that hosts or anybody who's advertising these short-term rentals in Portland list in their advertisements that number. I think from our perspective, we want to be realistic and create a realistic expectation with the city about what we can do in terms of verification.
Hold on a sec. I'm not suggesting you verify anything. I'm just asking you, what's the complication of you've created a field on your website? We're not asking you to do any verification. We're just asking you to require that any of your hosts put the number on the advertisement that appears on your website, which you control.
So the question is, should we require that field be filled out with some information?
Well, that's a question for you, and it's a question that we're going to grapple with because Thomas Lanham's going to come to us with a requirement that we mandate that. So ahead of that discussion, I'm asking, what problems does that present for you, for us to require that anybody who appears on your website has a permit number, not asking you to verify whether they've done all the paperwork correctly, but just post the permit number or they're not authorized to appear on your website?
From an engineering perspective, it's something that we certainly could do, and I can go back and talk with folks about doing that. I think what we are more interested in than just a requirement that people may or may not comply with is educating people so that number of permits increases and continues to increase. And I don't think there was any expectation on the city's part or ours that you would see 100% compliance very quickly, but I think we all expected that we would see a higher number of compliance, and we look forward to working with the city on that. In the most appropriate ways possible, whether it's through the avenues that you're suggesting or continuing more education efforts, probably some combination of all sorts of things.
So one of the challenges we have is that while you're putting these ads on your website and collecting a fee and encouraging a transaction, we have a concern that people may not either be aware of our code requirements or may not be in compliance. And ultimately, the code issues that we care about ensure that the guests that your hosts host are safe. We're not trying to regulate you out of business. We just want to make sure that that experience, and as someone also has suggested, we may even have some liability if we set the standard and then don't enforce it. So let's say it's 6 months from now and we're at 2% compliance rate.
I hope that's not the case.
Pardon me?
I hope that's not the case.
Well, we'll have you back in 6 months and we'll figure out whatever the numbers are. But if we're in the dismal single digits, what would you glean from that?
I don't want to ponder a hypothetical about where we'll be in 6 months. I think what we can all do is our best efforts to making sure that number continues to increase. And as I said before, it is as much in our interest because, you know, Portland really was a trailblazer in this regulatory area to ensure that this system is working both for folks in our community and for the city, and if it's not, to take a real hard look at what are serving as barriers to entry for hosts in our community. We certainly communicate with them. We've surveyed our hosts, and those are things that we can do in the future to understand what those barriers might be, what's preventing them, or what concerns arise.
So the last just point I'll make is that Commissioner Fritz has a bureau that she leads that has limited staff, limited resources, and a complaint-driven process. And if they don't get a complaint, then they're not gonna chase this issue. You're actually in a unique position because without your service, many of the hosts cannot advertise to the broader public. You regulate the host activity. You encourage ratings. You screen people and you collect a fee for it. So in some ways, you may be the best position to help us enforce a reasonable requirement that people get a permit. By simply saying that as a condition of appearing on your platform, the minimum they have to show is that they're in compliance with city law.
I just wanted to clarify a few points, and I appreciate the point. I just wanted to clarify a few things that I think that I heard. In terms of regulation or screening, I think that our platform was built with the idea in mind, similar to many other platforms in the sharing space, going all the way back to eBay or platforms like that, that our users and our community would reciprocally rate one another in order to provide valuable information to other consumers or members of our community. So, in terms of creating a reasonable expectation for, you know, in the 192 countries where hosts have chosen to list and share properties and their homes around the world, what we can do. There's more that we can do, but I think the description that you provided isn't entirely accurate in terms of our, you know, degree of involvement. When the platform was founded, it was very passive. It was the notion was, you know, akin sort of to Craigslist. And as we continue to grow and understand that we need to work more closely with cities and we need to partner with them, we became more involved and continue to do so. Our host guarantee is a good example of that. Building a customer experience, customer service function is another good example of taking a step further away from that that initial approach to a very hands-off ecosystem on our platform. Portland is now an example of that because our customer service function here in North America is based in Portland. But as we do that, I just want to create a realistic expectation. I think there's more that we can do to educate our community, and I'd like to continue talking with your office about any or all of these ideas as we move forward so that in 6 months or in 12 months, we all feel we see a continued rise and perhaps a greater rise in the number of permits that have been applied for and obtained in Portland.
Thank you.
Thanks. Well, and particularly in multifamily units, is just what we're considering today, there's definitely an incentive for Airbnb and other platforms to make sure that hosts know what their obligations are. We had testimony at the hearing in the summer about a planning and sustainability commissioner who was turned away from a building in Seattle because they didn't have the permission of the property manager or the owner. And clearly you don't want that to happen on a regular basis or nobody would continue to use your platform. So I think that that's obviously, as I said, a built-in incentive for you. I very much appreciate your willingness to work with development services and with staff in my office, and in particular your willingness to put out a survey both now and in a year. I know that was part of the discussions about allowing perhaps a little more flexibility on the number of units that would be set as the cap to maybe expand the universe of those who might want to do it a little bit rather than for the whole 90 days, for example. So perhaps this is a partial answer to Commissioner Fish, is that that survey, if you were to put one out in the next few weeks or so, you could ask your hosts, you know, what are the barriers to applying for a permit, and you know, how could we help? It's just a suggestion. I appreciate your willingness to work with us, and I think that the partnership approach is the best way to go. And in my experience, when people know what the rules are, most people will be willing to comply as long as they're not particularly burdensome. So I thank you for working with us.
Sure. And on the issue of caps, I did want to clarify one point additionally about Austin, which I heard you discussing earlier. And just to note, Austin does have a density limitation, those caps that you discussed, but those apply only to dedicated vacation rentals where there are no primary residents. So they have three tiers. If you're a primary resident sharing the home that you live in, there are no density restrictions. They apply only to dedicated short-term rentals, and then they apply slightly differently if it's a single-family home or a multifamily building.
Mm. Okay. How are those caps working out?
That's a good question. I'm not 100% familiar with the Austin example. I know they're looking at that now. They're actually going through a process, I believe, in the near future. But my understanding is they were one of the first cities that really looked at this, and HomeAway, which is another one of the platforms, is based in Austin. So I know they were very closely involved with that. And I know their representative was here at one of the previous hearings, so you might want to reach out to him to find out more information.
Thank you. And just going back to that survey, I'm assuming you'd be willing to work with Commissioner Saltzman as the commissioner in charge of housing to decide what's in that so that we can effectively gauge the impact on long-term rentals.
Sure.
Thank you.
It just prompted a related question. If I wanted to put my house on your website, do I have to fill out an application form?
There is a protocol for listing your unit. I'm not certain I understand the question.
What's the protocol?
Well, I'd encourage you to try it out, even just to see.
I have to talk to my wife first, but I want just what's the.
I can tell you because I've done that.
There we go. We've got a host right.
You have to register as a user, and after you register as a user, which would qualify you to be a guest, you are given the option to list a property, and if you list a property. Under the final field of other information, there's a place where it says permit number. If you enter your permit number in that field, it will appear as the last item of the pricing section of your listing. If you do not enter a number, nothing appears in that space. So today, when you look at listings for Portland, you hardly ever see a permit number. But I have found one. And I know of two others where a permit number displays. But that's all you do. You register as a guest, and you add a listing, which allows you to become a host. Is that correct?
Steve, okay. Thank you for doing that, Steve. That cues you up nicely to deliver the rest of your testimony.
I'm really glad David's here. I have about three questions.
Just put your name in the record.
I want to direct to him. My name is Steve Unger. I run the Lion and the Rose Bed and Breakfast in Portland. And given the ordinance itself, I think that the number one improvement that would make it work better is to limit the number of host absent nights to 12 days a year. I didn't know I was a socialist, but I guess I am. This is because the proximity of the contiguous units in short-term rentals and in multifamily buildings is much closer than in single-family homes, a wall rather than a yard. The close proximity greatly increases the impact on neighbors and contiguous units. And most problems, including security and other issues, can be avoided when the host is resident to supervise their property and their guests during the stay. And I think that 12 nights a year, they want to go on vacation or go to Seattle, you know, that's sufficient in a multifamily building. Now, we've discussed the issue of the poor level of registration, and I do grant, you know, 2 months is sort of a beginning point, and this may take a year or 2 years to kind of see the full result. But here are some suggestions that I would make. 5% of the new revenue paid by Airbnb and hotel tax should fund registration and enforcement, or outreach and enforcement activities by BDS and the revenue department, because there seems to be a complaint about lack of resources. And it seems like we're getting a bunch of extra money, and some slice of that could do that. Now, to its credit, Airbnb has introduced the permit field, and now either BDS or the Revenue Department needs to use the contact host function in Airbnb to send emails to all listings who do not have a license number displayed. Now, I've tried that, and it works. You do have to register as an Airbnb account, but once you do, you can hit the contact host button and send them an email. I don't think it's my job to do that, but I think if the Revenue Department or BDS Compliance did that, it would be pretty straightforward. The council should request that Airbnb send an email to the Portland community advising them of the new ordinance. Now, I've heard that an announcement was sent out, but I am a member of the Portland Airbnb community, and I don't remember getting an email that said, hey, guys, new ordinance, it's time for you to sign up. But you're willing to do that, right?
I did get one of those emails.
Okay, well, I didn't. Okay, now, Airbnb and the city and the Airbnb should work together as shared partners to set a date in time. So this is what we've been talking about, a date in time by which any listing in Portland not displaying a permit number would be removed. So this sort of gets to the question of, well, should it be 6 months? Should it be a year? What happens if we get to an end of a year? But at some point, you could just say, okay, we've given it a year. This is well known. Now we want this enforced. And the city should follow San Francisco in specifying fines for the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth violations. Another item is that when the tax collection announcement was made, it was a huge public announcement. And Airbnb has paid their third quarter taxes, which is the busiest travel months in Portland. But when I went to the Revenue Department to have them tell me how much Airbnb paid, I was told that was impossible. And when the Portland Tribune went and asked, they were told it was impossible, so they filed a Freedom of Information Act request. Would Airbnb be willing to volunteer a public statement about the amount of hotel tax Airbnb paid the city at the end of the third quarter?
Okay, you get to testify, but you don't get to cross-examine it.
Okay, I told you I had questions. Okay. So the last thing is this: the compliance-driven issue. Compliance-driven enforcement is essentially unfair. In fact, that's the reason that we're having this discussion, because 2 years ago, I think it was Robert Lowe, came and talked about he was closed down in Laurelhurst, but everybody else wasn't. So compliance-driven closes down some people, and then people down the street aren't closed down. So unless you philosophically believe that compliance-based enforcement is good, and I strongly disagree, you really need to have some level of proactive registration outreach and ultimately compliance activities. So I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks. Now you can answer.
I think my time is up.
You're fine. Oh, okay.
Welcome.
My name is Alima Considine, and I am a touring musician, and I sublet my home while I am on tour. It makes touring and maintaining a family financially feasible. Before I became aware of Airbnb, I would do short-term sublets on Craigslist, and honestly, this was pretty scary for both parties involved. Strangers on the internet with few ways of verifying each other, no insurance, and no infrastructure of safety. Airbnb makes me and my guests feel safe. It is common among my friends and I to travel semesters abroad, artist residencies, or just a couple weeks learning about another part of the world. It makes sense in many ways to have someone stay in our homes while we are gone, and doing this is the safest and most comfortable way that I am aware of. I live in a multi-unit building of approximately 15 units, and I think it's entirely conceivable that I could go on tour maybe four times a year for 2 weeks, and that someone else's roommate might go backpacking in Thailand for a month, and then the old lady at the end might go to the East Coast for the birth of her grandchild for a couple of weeks. And all of these times, it is certainly a help to be able to rent out our place in a safe and discreet manner. My house rules are strict. My neighbors have never been bothered. If permits are required, I don't think the fact that I applied first to be used a couple times a year should preclude my neighbor from making sure his rent is covered when he travels. I host many people, my huge extended Irish Catholic family, fellow musicians, actors in town for micro-budget indie films, and the occasional paying guest. And I feel that as long as it is being done responsibly, the distinctions between all of these people in and out of my home should be at my discretion.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you all. Have the next three.
Are Jessica Kimmer, Tyler Cox, and Julius Wiley.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hello. Thanks for taking the time to listen to our testimonies. A little introduction. My name is Jessica Kimmett. I am actually a Airbnb. I rent a room in my apartment with my landlady's permission. I've been doing it for about a year and a half, and I started doing it after my last roommate moved out, and I am in my 30s and over roommates. Airbnb has really given me the ability to pay bills. I have an incredible amount of student debt, yay master's degrees. And it has also actually brought a lot of people from around the world into my home for me to share with them, which I think is the goal of Airbnb, is to share your space. I am actually home 99% of the time. I don't let guests stay at my apartment when I am not there because I believe it is about sharing my space. I have people stay with me from China and from the Netherlands, and I've had somebody from Argentina. And I share with them my local community. I just had somebody ask for the name of a dry cleaner who could do same-day service. And I said, yeah, around the corner. It gives a little bit of a more personal nature, and it has allowed me to live a life that means that I might be able to get ahead. I would like to save money. I don't know if I'm ever going to buy a house. I don't know if that's in my cards, but I would like to not be in debt. And this is actually getting me more towards those goals. So I thank you guys for considering making this legal for people like me in rental units. I do see it as an equity issue because I can't keep up with homeowners.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Because you're the first person who's testified before us that said they had the permission of the landlord.
Yes.
So that fits one criteria. So can you give us any guidance as to whether you think the registration requirement that leads to a permit is, do we have it right, or do you think it should be fine-tuned in some way?
I think you have it right. My only concern is that, and the owner of the apartment or the condo, I believe, has a right to be involved, and that's why I asked my landlady first. I do worry with rising rents in Portland that if, you know, say I were new to this and I said to my landlady, I really want to do Airbnb, she's like, sure, but I'm going to charge you more rent to do it. And that's her right, but I do worry about increasing costs that way. But with that said, I still think that it's right to ask the person that owns the building.
And are you okay with the registration requirement and getting a permit?
Yeah.
For that activity?
Yeah. I don't know that I agree with notifying all of my neighbors. I will do it if it's required. But I don't know who my neighbors are bringing in. I have a new neighbor who brought in a roommate, and he's loud. And I have no say in that. Most of my neighbors actually already know that I'm doing it. I mean, it's really not that hard to find out. But it just kind of branches that territory of like, yeah, so my mother stays with me for 2 weeks. What if they don't like her? You know? So I guess I'm on the line with that one.
Thank you.
Well, they don't have to give permission. They just have to get notified.
Fair enough, yeah. I just kind of feel like it's another business. But I see why other people would say it might be.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Tyler Cox. I rent a two-bedroom apartment, and I am in one bedroom 100% of the time, and I rent out the other bedroom through Airbnb. I got involved with Airbnb and house sharing because my pet, my dog Yuki, became very ill and required many visits to the vet, and I had a lot of medical vet bills that kind of stacked up, and I didn't really have a way to pay for those. And a friend recommended that I try Airbnb to pay for those bills. And so for me, Airbnb has allowed me kind of an emergency fund to pay for emergency bills. And since resolution of that emergency, I've been able to actually save money because of Airbnb and house sharing. I wanted to speak to some of the verifications that are on Airbnb. There are a number of verifications that you do to verify your identity. There's you verify your phone number, your email, and then a U.S. ID badge. I think for me, I did my passport, and they recommend that you do your passport. So there are some verifications there as far as your identity goes. And then they do a reciprocal rating system, and you choose who your guests are. If somebody does not look favorable or dependable, you do not choose that person as a guest.
Is reciprocal rating like the Yelp service online? I mean, is it people who stay with you that then go online and rate you? So it's
So your guests are prompted several times with reminders to rate you. There's a rating system of like 5 stars in various genre or categories of like cleanliness, things like that, and communication. And then there's also a text box for you to leave your review as well as suggestions, and that's for the guest as well from the host. Commissioner Fish, I had a question for you. I know I'm past my time, but I was confused as to why codes in place that provide me as a primary resident for safety and health would not apply to somebody else in my second bedroom. Why would those codes that are there not apply to that person as well, whether they're a roommate, subletting, or a Airbnb guest?
Good point. Thank you.
That's a great question. The short answer is because it's a commercial activity, we're actually requiring different and higher standards of life safety than in just a residential, and there's some specific requirements that we're placing to make sure that you're safe in the same way that when we regulate hotels, motels, boarding houses, there's a different standard because they're not, the law looks at it as a different activity. It's more of a commercial activity.
And yeah, I'm sorry.
So we've been struggling to find that balance. I think it's an absolutely fair question. What I think you're saying is you wouldn't want to have someone in an apartment that you don't feel safe in and you're living there. So I think that's an entirely valid point, and we're trying to strike the right balance to make sure that your guest has the expectation of safety uniformly, not because of you necessarily. You may be a responsible host, but we want to make sure that there isn't another host that maybe hasn't put a battery in a smoke detector, doesn't have an egress from the room they're renting, and maybe isn't as conscientious as you.
Yeah, I guess I hope I've got this right, but my sense of these changes that we're making on smoke detectors and interconnection and those issues is that the building code has evolved over time. And in effect, we're fast-forwarding to current regulations and saying, if you're going to participate in this program, you have to meet the latest and greatest code, not just the code that might have been in effect 10 years ago when you remodeled the house and got an inspection. I think I've got the sense of that right. So we're saying whatever the current highest and best level of the code is, that's what we have a right to expect in this situation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Dr. Julius Wiley. I'm an immediate care physician in the Portland area for the last 7 years. And you know, as you probably know, we have quite a little startup community in the Portland area. We have Ty, Oregon. And one thing, if you're thinking about doing a startup and you are working a regular job and paying off loans and stuff, is that you find yourself pretty short on both time and money. Now, I have 3 physician friends who started up an immediate care clinic, and they chose to take out a big business loan, a very big business loan, and it ended up failing, and that was a really obviously a very big deal for them. So, I'm a graduate of the Portland the Providence Family Medicine Residency in Milwaukee, and I've been doing immediate care for the last 7 years, and so I just want to tell you about my entrepreneurial, my startup, and I've had two new customers in the last week, and how I used Airbnb to fund this startup. So a few years ago, I noticed that about a third of my patients would research their problem online before coming in. usually 20s and 30s, you know, educated. Some would take photos of their skin rashes and lesions. Also, lately, large employers in this region around America are having increasingly high deductible healthcare insurance plans that they're offering their employees. So that's $1,000 out of your pocket before your insurance kicks in. If, as an individual, you buy the bronze plan through the Affordable Care Act, that's $5,081 out of your pocket before insurance kicks in. So I started TapCare. You can find it on Google. It's a service offering a virtual office visit with a healthcare professional, right now me, and even treatment for customers using their mobile device. I've had two new customers, like I said, in the last week. One was the wife of a psychiatrist friend who had sinusitis. Another one was a partner of a close relative who had back pain. So to put it simply, if you have sinusitis, you can see me in my clinic for $200, or you can see me through video chat on TapCare for $59. It's that simple. So I've bootstrapped this almost entirely with Airbnb funds, paying $90 a night in my two-bedroom, two-bath. I'm no longer doing that anymore, but I am. The plan is to sell the place in the spring if this doesn't go through. I mean, I was also able to take a week this year in the middle of winter and visit Hawaii. And so I just want to put another take on this, is that entrepreneurs really find Airbnb and other similar home sharing great for making money to fund their startups. Hmm.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Questions? Thank you all.
Thank you. Next three, I believe the first name is Asse Christensen, Tubton Comerford, and Audrey Romero.
Are you here or still here? If not, let's take
Sandy
the next
Meyer, Sakumya Cromer.
Okay, looks like we've got three. Thanks very much. One. Welcome.
Hello. Hi.
Go ahead, please.
Oh, thank you. Thanks a lot for this is my second hearing that I've been to, and I love the way you guys are really taking everything into consideration.
Thanks. Just give us your name for the record.
Sandy Meyer. I got involved with Airbnb because I had some major doctor bills from due to stress. I'm a realtor, and I thought I got to find a new way. With the economic downturn, my income kind of went away for about 6 months. So I found myself in the emergency room with a heart problem. And Airbnb, for me, served so many purposes. I mean, one, it's a wonderful way to offer a service where you get, you know, immediate feedback. You're helping someone, they're helping me, and it helped me pay the bills. Somebody at the last hearing mentioned that we're ambassadors for Portland. That's one thing that I just wanted to emphasize, because I have that feeling every time that someone comes to visit and they just go, I loved it here. And I think, what kind of a impression would they have of Portland if they hadn't stayed with someone from Portland? You know, it would be like, oh, you know, they have, you know, some nice restaurants, but oh well, it's just like any other city. For me, it had an unexpected benefit, which was hope. After the economic downturn and all the things that were going wrong with our economy, I had a tendency to maybe sit in front of the TV too much. And when I started Airbnb with people from all around the world, I realized that people are how I always used to believe they were, that most of us are pretty cool. And most of us are, you know, people you can deal with and appreciate. And I definitely have that feeling, but it's been just renewed my faith in mankind, basically. And someone mentioned earlier about taking space away from the people who need it. I might be a homeless person if I didn't have Airbnb. Not only that, but I'm a volunteer. I volunteer a great deal of my time, and I have taken homeless people into my home, and that actually was one reason why I like the flexibility of Airbnb, so that I can use it for the highest and best use, not just to make money or not just to, you know, I don't know, have new friends. And I should say I live in Arbor Lodge, and there's a baby boom there, so half of my guests are the grandparents who I believe would not have come otherwise. They would either have had their kids and their grandchildren come and visit them. It doesn't seem like we are taking any business away from people that would have had it, like the hotels. I can't see these grandparents going downtown and, you know, coming out here. I just think that they would have probably slept on the floor at their kids' house. And also, I'm better able to take care of my unit. I have a duplex, and I have the unit next door. And I'm much happier with the way that I'm able to take care of my unit, because it's not 2 years before I discover that they haven't been turning on a fan and there's mold or something, you know. And my neighbors aren't aware that anything is different, unless I tell them. And I guess, you know, I have to embrace the idea that I'm older than a lot of people. And so I think it gives seniors and widows a great way to still feel relevant, to provide a service that many of us are so good at, hospitality, and to stay in our homes, which is the goal of everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I ask you a question?
Because
one of the purposes of today's hearing is to get feedback on the amendments. We've had a bunch of hearings on short-term rentals and the benefits of that enterprise, but we're trying to also get some focused testimony on the amendments before us. If you are required to get a permit, and if we require that Airbnb puts your permit number on your ad, would that make it difficult or impossible for you to continue participating in this program?
Well, if you charge me $100,000, then maybe, but otherwise, no. I mean, if it's reasonable, and I don't have my permit yet because, frankly, it's just kind of confusing to me where the dust is going to settle. So I just thought, okay, I'll wait until it's all official. And, you know, like you said, it is official, but at least with Airbnb.
Mayor, I move an emergency clause on the amendments before us today. Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you
for your testimony.
Thanks
I didn't
much.
Get it.
To make it go into effect right away.
I wanted to bring you the clarity you were seeking. So
thank you
for your testimony.
Welcome.
Hello, my name is Soumya Comer, and I am an Airbnb host. And I will say that I did register to pay my taxes on the unit immediately, but I do not have a permit yet, only because of procrastination. So I would like to suggest to Airbnb that they send out a few more reminders. I also use Airbnb when I work abroad. And in the past, I used Craigslist, which was very scary. And so I feel much more comfortable finding apartments. I work in Paris, finding apartments in Paris that are secured through the excellent system of security that is offered through Airbnb. I also think I think it's a good idea for Portland to work with Airbnb the way we are, because these services are going to exist one way or the other. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Hi, my name is
Merci, but thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Please.
My name is Audrey Romeo, and I'm a new host. I moved to Portland from New York, but I've been an Airbnb guest for the last almost 3 years, and I've traveled through Europe that way when I was able to, and also across the country. My whole family from New York went to my son's wedding that way because there was 25 of us, and it was so much nicer. And I was able to stay in Portland as an Airbnb guest for like 7 weeks before my condo was ready out here, because I came out here to retire and be near my daughter. To me, it's a great way to meet people. It's a great way as a senior citizen to stay involved with people and to see what's going on. It's a great way to be invited to other countries, because you get to meet people that have homes in Chile, and so I get a place to go and visit them. And I also don't feel that, I guess what I don't understand is I will pay the $100 permit, because I'm new and I'm just starting this as a host, giving back some of what I've received over the last 3 years as a guest. But I don't really understand how the $100 permit is going to make my apartment any more safe than it is, because I already had it inspected, and I already, you know, there are rentals across from me. But, you know, I'm willing to. I just don't really see how that makes it any safer. It almost is like we're accusing people that reside in Portland of not being decent hosts.
No, but in fairness, because you're a transplant from New York, you've come from one jurisdiction that is not only where it's illegal, but the Attorney General of the state is suing the providers in court. So the $100 offsets some of the administrative costs we have.
Like I said, I don't have a problem paying it. I just don't understand how it's going to make my guests any safer. My guests, if they're anything like I was, I could have afforded to go to a regular hotel someplace, but I chose to travel this way as part of the intimacy of being involved in living with people that are part of the neighborhood, respect their neighborhood, and bring you around to different things in their neighborhood. Mm-hmm. To me, it's just I don't understand the safety question about how that $100 is going to do it. I don't have a problem with paying it if it just means that. Well, actually, I don't know what it means, but I'll pay it because I pay the taxes. I believe in taxes. That's what we get for having a civil society. I have no problem with that.
We could use you again tomorrow.
I just made Steve Novick's day. So.
Would you be willing to come
Oliver
tomorrow
Wendell
afternoon?
Holmes is in the house.
Yeah, could you come on a weekly basis? Because you'll make Steve week. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we have a little tax question tomorrow afternoon, so we may have to put your testimony on replay.
That's fine.
Thank you.
No problem. Anything else? Any questions for me?
No, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
We're glad you relocated from New York. There's a few others here.
Yes.
We'll
all right.
The next three are Lightning, John Miller, and Peter Ovington.
Come on up. Go ahead, Lightning, you're on first.
Yes, my name is Lightning. I'll represent Lightning Rethink Lab. As you know, I've had mixed feelings about Airbnb, but I will say one thing about Airbnb. I am impressed that you keep making adjustments and trying to make improvements, and this is some very complicated things to try to work out, plain and simple. Now, one of the things on the multifamily, I have kind of an issue on that, but you are putting a cap on that, so that's looking good. Now, a couple issues I have, again, on the health and safety of the guests. I'm not really hearing any type of criminal background checks, either on the hosts or the potential guests. Now, as you know, you have more of a feeling of safety in apartment buildings because a lot of people have to go through those type of background checks. Now, we heard a guest say, well, I can look at somebody and that's how I make my determination. But as you know, in the real world, that doesn't always work. So I'd like to see maybe some more thought on some type of criminal background checks, and whether the hosts like this or not, even on the hosts and the potential guests. And I'd like to see that maybe even tied into the permit process. Because when you're talking safety, you don't want to be complacent on those type of issues. Now, another issue I have is on the smoke alarms. I think there should also be an extinguisher put into place, maybe in one of the rooms. That's not uncommon in apartment buildings, but we're not really hearing that happening, because if a fire starts, let's try to put it out immediately is the best thing to do. We're not hearing anything about extinguishers. Any discussions on that? I'd like to maybe have something looked into that also. Another issue I have is on the insurance aspect of this. When you're applying for that permit, I'd like to see insurance policies already in place and the insurance companies aware on what your intent is, because that might not be covered under your current policy, especially in multifamily. Do I have more minutes?
Try to wrap up, please.
Okay. Other than that, again, Airbnb, I was more against you at the beginning. I'm very impressed on the direction you're going right now. And I have a little problem with Mayor at this time on Uber. If we're talking shared economy, we need to start looking at all the different type of businesses and allow them to participate in the Portland market. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi, I'm John Miller. I'm with Oregon Opportunity Network. Oregon On is an affordable housing association, and we have 17 affordable housing members here in the Portland area. Back in August, Oregon On came before you and asked that the tax that is collected on this be directed to support affordable housing. We were told no on that, and so we want to just remind you that affordable housing is a huge issue that is facing this city. And it's growing every day. And one of the things that we're really concerned about is that Airbnb might exacerbate the problem. Now, I did sit on the committee that took a look at the whole Airbnb for multifamily, and it was a very good process. We had a lot of really good things come out of that process. Some of the things that were recommended were that all units must have a primary occupant. All short-term rentals must have a permit displayed on the ad. In order to get a permit, the unit must be inspected for life safety issues. In order to get an inspection, you must have landlord permission. So we'd sort of built a structure that made sure that the landlord knew what was going on and so forth. And I would add that because of this structure, my members would never allow this in their buildings because of federal rules. And so with that structure in place, that would keep my members safe from falling out of compliance with federal rules. So that we were happy about the structure. What I see today, though, is a pretty weak structure in that while we're requiring folks to get a permit, earlier when the question was asked, well, what happens if the permit isn't there? And their response was, well, nothing. And to me, that's not a very robust compliance mechanism. And so while we're still collecting the tax from Airbnb directly on these, that's great, and the revenue is coming into the city. What I'm concerned about is that if folks are doing this without a permit, then it will have an effect on affordable housing. And so I would really ask that in 6 months from now, we come back and take a look, and we want to look at how many folks actually have a permit and compare that to the number of ads on the site. And also really take a hard look at what effect is this having on affordable housing in the city. If this is actually having a negative effect, then I absolutely think that those dollars need to be directed towards helping to solve the problem. Margaret Bax, who was the retired city housing policy manager, asked me to give a couple comments. She had to leave. She teaches over at Portland State and had to leave. So I'm just going to, real quick, she actually wanted to echo the same comment that I just made, that these funds should be directed towards the HIF, the Housing Investment Fund, and they should be used for operating expenses, for rent subsidies, and to pay for the cost of the analysis that's going to have to go in to see what kind of impact this is actually having on affordable housing in the city. Thank you.
Thank you.
John, if I could, number one, two members of council thought taking the revenue and putting it in the HIF was a good idea. Expressed principled opposition based on one of two arguments. One, the timing of the ask outside of the normal annual budget cycle. And two, the question of whether we would dedicate revenue for a particular purpose. Both are issues that are live and that we confront regularly. So those are my sense from that debate was that the preference of the council was to have that discussion at the normal budget cycle. As an appropriation for the HIF, and so that it will be brought back for that purpose. Second, though, you raise an interesting question about how do we evaluate the impact on affordable housing. You said we should put some money into a study, but Could you give us at least a preliminary thought about how we get past anecdotal evidence to something more concrete? Because, you know, we hear from Community Alliance of Tenants, people say that, you know, they've lost their lease because we hear. But that's in the nature of anecdotal. How do we drill down and get some good data upon which the council could act 6 months from now or a year from now?
Well, that's a great question. It's hard to say going beyond anecdotal at this point. I really think that earlier David mentioned he thought he wasn't sure how they could require the permit. Well, it's really simple. You make the permit field required. And so if the city were really to compel every single user to get a permit, and every single user attested that they were the primary occupant of the unit, then presumably anyone that's participating in Airbnb under that structure, or I should say short-term rental, I know it's more than Airbnb, is not taking a unit off the market. So I would think, for one thing, just compliance is just really, really important. Another issue would be public education. And so making sure that we have a real robust education program for not only the folks that want to participate in the program, but for all people that rent in the city and all people that are living in the city, actually. So now that it's legal, we really need to explain what the rules are. If we're going to stick with a complaint-driven process, then folks need to understand, well, how do I complain? Who do I complain to? And so forth. So I think that there needs to be a really really robust education and outreach program that goes along with this. And I think from the complaint process that we're going to have in place and ensuring that people are actually getting permits in order to do this, then we should be able to measure, you know, okay, what kind of impact is this actually having on affordable housing? And our hope is that it's not going to have a huge impact if the rules are actually followed closely. So I think the key is making sure that the rules are being followed closely.
Thank you.
You know, one thing you could maybe do through your organization over the next few weeks is think a bit, talk among yourselves, as they say, about what might constitute a helpful economic analysis. Because we're not just looking at this in a vacuum. So if there's a pool, and there is, of about 80,000 rental units in the city, we're talking about 1,500 hosts currently registered on Airbnb. If those fall out in the same proportions as single-family, multifamily, we've got roughly 500 multifamily units participating in that particular sharing site. We will construct about 5,000 new multifamily units this year in the city of Portland. So we got a pool. Someone is taking a cupful out, and someone else is dumping 5 gallons in. So I want us to look at all those factors when we now analyze the not just theoretical impact, but the actual impact of this sharing economy effect on the housing market, because it's not a static thing. We are building 5,000 units. Is that raising the average price or lowering it? That's what economists are for. So I'd like us to look at all those factors in an honest economic analysis rather than just focusing on the cupful that is in this debate.
Mayor, just with one qualification on that, is that the overwhelming majority of the new inventory is market rate.
And of course.
And is unaffordable to about 20,000 households. So that John's industry is more concerned about people that are priced out of the market. And the concern I have is that second room, that room in a house that someone's renting at a reasonable rate, the roommate and other things, those are the people, if they're displaced, don't have access to the market rate units that are being built. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, our incentive plans to put affordable units in the market rate housing have failed.
Well, I think thanks in part to this city council, about 2,000 of those 5,000 units are affordable. So we're adding units to the inventory one way or another, and we're subtracting units from the inventory in others. And any economic analysis has got to look at both of those inputs and outputs. So your thoughts about how to do that, again, technically,
it's a lot more complicated because we're losing units because we're not enforcing our no net loss policy. So I appreciate the macro view, but I actually don't want the macro view to obscure the issue he's raising, which is affordable housing for people that are priced out of the market. And we're rolling the dice here. We're monetizing rental property, and we're creating a new market dynamic in a city that doesn't have rent control, doesn't have rent stabilization, and can't keep up with the need for people priced out of the market. So Doesn't mean we shouldn't do it, but it does, I think, strengthen the argument that we ought to use some of the proceeds or other resources to mitigate the impact. To define the impact, though, isn't, in my view, looking at market rate housing. We got lots of market rate housing. It's unaffordable to lots of people. It's the affordable stuff, even up to 60%. And for some people, that room in the house and the roommate arrangement is the affordable housing. And they're not, if displaced, they're not going and renting a $2,000 one-bedroom apartment. They're priced out.